and a sure success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. United we stand, divided we fall.
And gentlemen, to the Anthony Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, TheAnthonyEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Today's headlines on Guerrilla Media: Tunisia, a warning to corrupt rulers. It seems very likely that Tunisia may just be the first in a series of uprisings around the North African continent. Egypt might be next, apparently. Also, in other news, Israel's Orthodox rabbis say it's a good idea to put Palestinians in ovens. Oh, the hypocrisy. It turns out that even elected officials are starting to rise up against corruption, particularly in Greece, where a Greek mayor has been arrested after bulldozing toll booth barriers. I thought that was great. Fantastic. And supposedly, Australia's obsession with global warming contributed to the Brisbane flood. Yeah, right. Of course, they did build huge amounts of settlements and stuff like that on floodplains, which isn't the brightest thing to do. But however, you know, heaps of people live on floodplains everywhere all around the world because, hey, it's really, really close to rivers where you need your water. And occasionally, your town just gets washed away in some description of biblical event. But on that note, most natural disasters aren't natural at all, according to Mike Adams from Natural News. It's basically a catch-all scapegoat term for when people basically cut down all their forests and stuff like that, which stabilize the soil, for example, in Brazil, where they're just having huge mudslides. You wind up destabilizing everything, and you pay the consequences. And the heaps of families buried. Pretty rough stuff. Perhaps they should have seen it coming. And the worst article from Guerrilla Media today was Bill Gates wants to register all new babies on the planet for vaccines. Not exactly unforeseen from this filthy, disgusting scumbag. Wouldn't you think, Will? He's actually promoting wireless technology to do it.
Well, look, the proof that we're on the right side of reality is that no one in the mainstream media or no ordinary, normal thinking person could see the motivation of Bill Gates having such a dastardly plan and motive. But it makes sense to us because we know he's a scumbag eugenicist.
Yep. Know your enemy, ladies and gentlemen, and you may just defeat them. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, where we teach you what to do. We'll be right back.
I got some so-called friends. They'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no.
I want to know.
Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
And welcome back, ladies and gents, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an incredibly special guest for you today. In fact, I can't even believe we got her. Her name is Cindy Sheehan, and unlike a lot of people that work for the government, she's anti-war. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Unlike people that work for the government?
Yeah. Well, you know, basically the president who thinks that it's a grand idea to leave people in Afghanistan.
Oh, okay. And, I thought you meant like I worked for the government and I wasn't like most people because I'm against war.
Okay, we'll get off on the wrong foot, shall we?
I thought about that myself too. I was like going, wait, does Cindy work for the government in some capacity? Great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be on.
Now, your story, personally, you're one of the very few anti-war activists who's prepared to, in fact, get arrested for this, as you have done recently, I believe, outside Pennsylvania Avenue. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there's quite a few people who are willing to get arrested and spend a couple hours in jail. I think that, you know, that's admirable, but I think that we need that happening, like, on a massive scale every day. I think there needs to be hundreds of people every day in Washington, D.C., getting arrested, going back, clogging up the system. But on March, I think it was March 19th, somewhere around the, or the 20th, last year on the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, I and myself and seven other people were arrested in front of the White House, and we, six of us, spent 52 hours in jail from Saturday afternoon until Monday evening. We were kept in, of course, deplorable conditions and taken to court Monday morning in shackles, so we were shackled for like 10 hours on Monday, finally released Monday evening. And then we had the six of us who spent all that time in jail just doing, we were arrested for nonviolent protests for civil disobedience. We were given a stay-away order from the White House, so there was a perimeter around the White House that if we violated that, then we would have gone to jail for a mandatory 6 months term, and many people in the D.C. area think that that's the first time in a long time that anybody was given a stay-away order from the White House. But, you know, that's just a condition of the nation these days. You know, people thought that many civil liberties and human rights were taken away during the Bush administration, and they were correct, but Obama is just escalating this. I was arrested probably about 10 or 12 times in front of the White House when George Bush was president. I never spent more than like 5 or 6 hours in jail, but now that or had a stay-away order from George Bush, and I stalked him from Texas to Maine to Washington, D.C., and I never had a stay-away order from the White House or from him, and it seems like the police state is increasing dramatically under the Obama administration.
Yeah. Well, we call him Barack H. O'Barry on this show because obviously he's such a grand advocate of freedom, isn't he? You know, very supportive of criticism of the war, which he helped to continue, of course. Right. After his campaign promised to end all these brutal, useless conflicts and whatnot. And, just like every other president, it seems to me, being a New Zealander, of course, just watching the television and all these promises get delivered, they never come through the other side, do they? It's almost as if the Oval Office is a meat grinder for good intentions.
Well, and that's debatable whether anybody goes into the Oval Office with good intentions. Being me and being, a historian, I went to UCLA, I majored in U.S. history, and, you know, being a part of U.S. history for the last almost 7 years since my son was killed, I think by the time a person reaches that level, they've sold out to the military-industrial complex or the corporate interests long before they make it to the White House. And I think that it's just Madison Avenue marketing. It's just a style. It's just a new and improved product that we're sold every 4 to 8 years. And, you know, Obama, under his administration, they have been targeting peace and social justice activists. At least a dozen of them have received grand jury subpoenas. The FBI raided their homes, tossed their homes, confiscated papers and computers and cell phones and, you know, phone machines, everything. And also, under the Obama administration, we're being subjected to those screeners in the airports. And just so many things have, it seemed like so many oppressions have escalated under the Obama administration. He's using the same, you know, justification, the same phony justification for his suppression and oppression of civil and human rights as the Bush administration did. So that tells me is that we actually have no hope when it comes to the president or when it comes to most people, 99% of people in Congress. They've all sold out. They've sold us out. They've sold the principles out. They've sold this nation out. They've sold humanity out. So we have to rely on each other. We have to find hope in ourselves and hope in each other to get through what are going to be worse times. And if we don't do that, then we won't survive. To survive these times and to come out thriving, we have to reject what's happening in Washington, D.C., and come together as community to make this world and this planet, you know, our little community and the planet much better. Because, of course, the corporations and the military-industrial complex and the U.S. empire are fighting against any kind of health and well-being for us.
I feel like we've reached the end of the show already, Cindy. I mean, I feel like we've already reached a conclusion. But, I mean, isn't it sad that a lot of people still believe in this left-right dichotomy? I mean, there are left and right principles that exist philosophically, but not in practice in terms of the Republicans and the Democrats or their counterparts overseas here in New Zealand or in Britain with the Tories and Labour. I mean, isn't it sad that people such as Keith Olbermann, you know, I loved Keith's commentary when Baby Bush was in power. Now Barrack's in power, you know, he just can't say a bad word, really. I mean,
and anybody I mean, who criticizes Barack H. O'Barry is now officially, quote, a cracker.
Or right. A Tea Party right-wing fascist or whatever they want to label them. I mean, isn't it sad, Cindy, that a bunch of the left has been co-opted into thinking that this guy is some sort of savior and we can't criticize him?
Well, I think that, like I said, I think it's mass marketing. I think it's just a campaign to keep people in, you know, my class, you know, keep us under the illusion or delusion that there is a difference in the what I call the robber class. In the robber class, there's no difference between political parties or male, female, gay, straight, black, white, brown, or yellow. All they care about is money and all they care about is power. But they are really good at keeping us fighting with each other. So instead of talking about the issues in a very intelligent way, they have all these distractions to keep us divided, like, you know, the distractions of gay marriage or abortion or, you know, this distraction that just happened in Tucson. Instead of blaming the system, instead of analyzing and blaming the system that would foster something like that, people are jumping on this, oh, it's the violent right wing that is fostering that. No, it's the empire. It's the system that fosters that kind of violence. And so it keeps us from having these intelligent discussions, analyzing things, because we always want to have these knee-jerk reactions. And people like Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow are just as bad as Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity in propping up that system.
This Tucson shooting, I found very interesting, the media reaction, because the left have blamed the right have blamed the left, and nobody blamed the gunman.
or no one blamed the establishment that sits behind left and right, the real underlying principles. And like you say, Cindy, gay marriage and abortion, they may be serious issues at a certain point in time, but right now we've got, you know, fiat currency is being peddled, just destroying people's livelihoods.
Well, I think gay marriage and abortion are very serious issues, and, you know, they do deserve an intelligent debate. But the people in the government use them, whip up, instead of intelligent debate, they use, you know, this emotional fervor to whip up, you know, this hatred between each other.
Or you're a racist or whatever.
Well, they want anecdotal arguments based upon knee-jerk visions of who each side sees as a problem. They don't want, I mean, people just can't admit to themselves that the problem could be in the establishment, because that would mean too many people have to be involved, and it goes back to their idea of what constitutes a conspiracy theory. You know, so the majority can't be wrong ever. This is one of the failings of democracy in my mind. The majority can't be wrong, and so therefore we have to pick on those far right extremists or those far left extremists.
I mean, well, when we get in a situation we have today, you know, especially in the United States, where we get all our information from these people who are committed to fostering all these myths, then usually the majority is wrong. And so I feel like if I ever take a majoritarian view, then I should reevaluate my own thoughts and do more study on a situation.
Well said. Well said. Because otherwise, society just tends towards lowest common denominator understandings, and basically, having your culture just run, and your desires and wants and needs being set by Madison Avenue, right?
That's basically what we have in the United States. And when you look at the people who own the media, the corporate media around the world, they're the same people who are profiting off of the war, and they're the same people who are lining the pockets of the politicians. And it's just a very incestuous and unhealthy environment for anybody who's not in the top 1% of the wealthy in the world. It's a global problem. It's not just a problem in the United States. It's global, and it's getting to where you can't hardly go anywhere without feeling the reach and the violence and the oppression of the empire.
I mean, you've done a huge amount for the anti-war movement, and that's a credit to you. Over here in New Zealand, we have anti-war movements. And I can't help but feel that they're in it for some sort of comfort, because there is virtually no one of credibility in our anti-war movements over here who can admit that 9/11 was an inside job, for instance. There's virtually no one in these same movements who can see that, you know, Jack Bauer-style TV shows like 24 popping up all over the media are part of the war machine's psych warfare program. I mean, it's really sad to me that the anti-war movement as a whole doesn't have more insight into this grand mechanism.
Well, I think it's unfortunate, because I see that here too in the United States, is that when my son was first killed, it was my first experience in the anti-war movement. And, you know, through my pain and my suffering and just, you know, really profound pain and anger, I thought many of the people that I was working with wanted the same thing I did, and that was an end to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and to a diminishment of, or an end to the military-industrial complex. But what most of the people I worked with really wanted was just an end to the Bush administration. And so they weren't anti-war, they were just anti-Bush and anti-Republican. And so that's why the anti-war movement has practically died in the United States. We can't do anything that really challenges the system, because if you do something that really challenges the system, like question the official story of 9/11, or question the oppressive measures that the United States government has taken, then that means that you also put the Democrats into a bad light. And to most people that work in the movement, it's all about the you know, the partisan politics to them. It's not about truly about peace. And another thing I want to say is when you say that people are in their comfort zones, I think that, you know, people say, well, we've marched on Saturdays since the Vietnam War. And, you know, if we actually go down to Washington, D.C. on a, you know, on a weekday and shut that city down, then we'll be inconveniencing so many people, we'll be inconveniencing ourselves. And actually, you know, we've talked about in my circle of friends who are more revolutionary and want to bring down the system, not just the wars. We call it the peace industrial complex because it seems like some people almost have a stake in just doing enough to verbalize or to show on a Saturday their opposition to the war, but they don't want to do anything that actually might make a difference because it's their way of life.
They like the status quo. It's become the status quo.
Getting sick of this real centrist controlled opposition, you know? I mean, they'll oppose little ticks here and there. I mean, it's like they're a hairdresser and they don't like that particular follicle. They don't like that particular follicle when they're dealing with a murderer that they should just be cutting the head off, you know?
Well, that's the problem we're having in the United States with this two-party monopoly that we have over the control of the government. And when, you know, most of the people believe that there's a difference between Democrats and Republicans, and they don't actually look at the facts and what's happening and what's actually going on. They just think that, you know, there's some people that think if Sarah Palin was off the face of the earth, then, you know, the United States would be a lot better. And there's some people who think that if Barack Obama was gone, the U.S. would be better. But no, they're just symptoms.
It's fool guys.
You know, they're just symptoms of the disease. They're not the disease.
In the grand scheme of things, these are just fool people, just front people to take the rap for the elite who love this two-party system, how it polarizes the population, and they maintain controls over the central banks and therefore everything that follows. And a bunch of people just go, oh, well, nothing I can do. Better go with the flow. Better help endorse it. Better make my destiny, you know, empower theirs.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We're
I'm
having
part
this
of the solution if I vote for people who don't actually do anything of any real worth for my nation. I'm part of a great society. I'm part of freedom. I'm part of something that actually really matters. And just like everything we hear in the meeting, it's in the media, it's a big freaking lie. Thank you, Cindy. After the break, ladies and gentlemen, more from Cindy Sheehan on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Is my very special pleasure to welcome our guest back, Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Now, we wanted to discuss with you the war in Iraq. Now, the justifications for going to Iraq was that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, which was a lie, that Iraq had connections to Al-Qaeda, which was a lie, and at the moment, people are still there from America doing two things. They're either A, making a huge amount of money as contractors for private firms, or two, they're making very small amounts of money working for the government, putting their lives on the line as a soldier. What's your take on this, and how long now has the United States been at war in Iraq? What has this done? How much money has been spent? You know, there's a whole lot of elements that I really, really want to get into here, and I'd love it if you'd share your knowledge with us.
Well, of course, we invaded Iraq on March 20th, 21st, somewhere around there, two different dates, one here and one in Iraq, and that was in 2003, so we're going on the eighth year. Well, actually, we'll be going into the ninth year in this, 2011. And even though Obama administration claims that they've ended the war, there's 2 to 3 mercenaries there or civilians there for every one troop that remains in Iraq. And not only do we have, our troops still there and the mercenaries, we have the so-called green zone that is the size of, at least 17 football fields. That's an enormous embassy. And, of course, the government there are puppet governments. The other day, if it was yesterday or the day before, 3 of our soldiers were killed in Iraq. There's violence there every day. Their country still doesn't have the basic infrastructure. They, don't have access to electricity 24 hours a day, clean water, food, medicine. It's still a country that, is having some deep troubles. And, of course, we've spent trillions of dollars in our occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan, with many trillions more to come. And people here in this country, in the United States, unemployment rate is, I just heard on the mainstream media, not on our independent or alternative media, that the real unemployment rate is 22%. That's Great Depression levels. They're raising the fees on a university. They're lowering the money spent on education and healthcare and our own infrastructure here in the United States. And, of course, as we're losing our jobs and losing our income security, prices on everything is going up. And I'm not complaining. I'm not saying, wow, 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 poor America, because, our the money we spend overseas and spend on our military-industrial complex is responsible for the crumbling of this empire. And I am the first one to say that the military empire of the United States needs to collapse. But if we did it in a strategic way and brought our troops home and started converting our military spending into spending on green energy and green jobs and rebuilding the infrastructure here and leaving other countries alone and stop killing innocent people in other countries, then, not just the United States, but the entire world would be a better place. And so in Iraq, we had over 5,000 troops killed, over 1 million Iraqis killed. Of course, one of those troops was my son, and he was killed on April 4th. 2004. This coming April will be 7 years since he was killed, and it was for absolutely nothing. Nothing positive has come out of our misadventures in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, I don't think anything positive can come from war and come from violence and come from using our young people as bullet sponges or to kill other innocent people. So, we really have to Just say that there has been nothing good come from these invasions, occupations. Nothing good will come from them. And what they are just these money holes. So the people in the war profiteers and the banks and the people in the government can get richer and get more powerful while we get poorer and while we suffer.
And while we watch Halliburton's profits soar and they put these wonderful advertisements on TV, we're helping the troops reach their home and blah, 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 blah. Come on. Seriously. I can believe, because it happens so often, that the American public has been dumbed down to the point where they think that the war in Iraq is a good thing. And do you experience things like that, Cindy? Like people who are ignorantly blazing on, saying that the war in Iraq is a good thing, believe that it's actually for democracy and freedom?
There are still some people who believe that. And, of course, they believed that when Bush was president, and they believe it now. And they you know, believe, well, at least we got Saddam Hussein out of power. At least we, you know, saved the people of Iraq from Saddam, not caring that we had to kill over a million people and displace 3 or 4 million more people to do that. But I want to just tell you guys, the overriding emotion in this country about the wars is apathy and ignorance. Or I should say ignorance and apathy. Even when my son was killed, people would say, you know, what happened to your son? I said he was killed in the war, and they always said, what war? So, you know, it's just
and you've received a wide amount of attention, haven't you, Cindy? I mean, you've been on TV and radio, and, I mean, have you been on Fox?
Just one time. One time, I mean, I've been on Fox a lot because they talk about me a lot, but one time I agreed to go on as a guest of one of the commentators over there, and that was Sean Hannity, and that's only because he called me. I said he would hound me all the time to be on his show, or his producer would, and I finally told my assistant, I said, you tell Lauren that I'll go on Sean's show if he calls me personally and apologizes for every nasty lie he's told about me. And you know, within a minute he called me, within a minute of me telling my assistant that and her telling his assistant that, Sean Hannity was on the phone, so I couldn't back down. But there's a funny story about me going on Sean Hannity's show, too. Is he said, Cindy, we'll fly you from wherever you are to New York, and then I'll fly you to wherever you have to be after you appear on my show. And I said, okay, Sean, after I appear on your show, I have to go to Cuba. So Fox News actually paid for my illegal trip to Cuba. I think that's pretty awesome.
That is awesome. That's great. Really? Oh, boy.
They might as well be useful for something, you know?
Absolutely.
You should have got them to fly you out here. But I mean,
well, I want to tell you guys, too, that there are some peace people in New Zealand that are trying to put together enough funds to get me there. So I have Vinny's email. I should put you in touch with those people in New Zealand, and we can work together to get me down there for some actions and some work.
I'll be glad to help.
That'd be great. Excellent, excellent. Mm-hmm. I mean, no, isn't it sad that people like Sean Hannity can influence, I don't know, 20 million plus Americans on a regular basis? The guy's a nutcase.
Well, he is. You know, he is not good. He's not a good person, and I wouldn't call him a nutcase. The one thing about Sean that's different from the other people on Fox News is that Sean really believes. Sean believes in this myth that America is. People like Bill O'Reilly and Ann Coulter, it's just an act to them for money. But what's worse, acting for money or being a true believer? At least Sean Hannity is a true believer in what he says.
I can tell. I can tell with some of his vitriol about 9/11 and anyone who questions the war. I can tell he believes in it, but I think that makes him nuts. I think he's
he believes in, of course. We don't agree with that, and we don't believe in it. But, a lot of people, tell me, too, on the other side, they said, we don't agree with you, but we at least admire your consistency that, you know, you're anti-war when Bush was president, and you're still anti-war when Obama's president. Even though we don't agree with you, we admire, your beliefs and the fact that you're willing to act on your... And I don't admire Sean Hannity. Don't get me wrong. I don't like Sean Hannity. I do think he's dangerous because he does have a certain segment of the population that, put him up on a pedestal. But, I think it's better to be a believer and do what you do than just do something for crass, materialism.
I would agree with that. I think that's what the world suffers from. I think the world suffers from a lack of belief and ideologies. I'm not for people, picking up, the dangerous ideologies just willy-nilly and running around killing people. But on the other hand, I think nihilism is the root of this apathy we see, and people just going, I don't know. What do you care? What can I do about 9/11? What can I do about the war? It's apathy that paves the way for all these actions to occur.
Well, you know, and Sean Hannity is actually a product of, you know, American upper class upbringing, that, you know, America is the model, the shining example of democracy and peace and freedom all over the world. And if there's been times where we've done wrong things, it's an aberration, or if we did something that was bad, it was for a good reason, so then it was still good. So, you know, Sean is just a product of our education system and our media and, you know, the mythology and the statism that occurs from the time we're born in this country. You know, that America can do no wrong, and when America does something wrong, it was right anyway. So, you know, Sean is more, you know, is more mainstream America, certainly, than I am.
I'm not anti-American by any stretch. I think America has a great history. Also,
oh, I'm anti-American.
America's definitely,
I'm anti-U.S. government. I'm not against my fellow Americans, but I think our history is riddled with oppression and violence. And
I think so,
know.
Too. I'm anti the U.S. government's hijacking by who I see as a combination of secret societies. I don't see them as the legitimate constitutional government that was meant to be there. That's my take on it. I think the Constitution's a great document. I know it was used for some, shall we say, some racist initiatives in the beginning. But hey, you know, nowhere's perfect. I think it's a hell of a lot better than anything we've got down here in the Antipodean reaches of the world. I just think it's been hijacked by a bunch of scum who rule Europe.
Well, and you know, our country. It, you know, it is a good document, but it's just a piece of paper. And the ruling class has never had to, you know, follow the precepts of the Constitution. But the only people that have to follow any kind of rule of law, of course, are us. We're the ones. We can't step outside the line. We can't step over the line without paying dearly. But the ruling class can do just about anything they want without having any consequences. And, you know, it was that way in the beginning, and it's just getting worse today.
I hate how people accept that. I hate how people can accept that governments can go and wage wars and they can kill millions of people here willy-nilly, and we can't question it even without being called names, without being called, I don't know, nutcases and hippies and conspiracy theorists. But then if I break the speed limit down the road, mm-hmm. or if I do something wrong, you know, the full weight of the law comes down, and the fellow citizen, who's a nihilist about everything of importance, says to me, good, I hope you have to pay the government. Good, I hope you have to go to prison.
Right.
Isn't that just the biggest form of mental illness you've ever heard of?
Well, and it's super frustrating here, too, when, you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney violated international law, national law, human rights, and they're free to go and profit and roam the most of the world as free people. And when Barack Obama came into power, he said, "We have to look forward. We can't look back." How would that defense work for us? Oh yeah, Judge, I'm sorry, but haven't you heard? We're looking forward now.
I've changed my ways.
Looking forward to tyranny, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. A very special guest is Cindy Sheehan. We'll have more from her after the break. Cindy Sheehan to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
There's too much confusion.
Welcome back, folks.
I can't get no relief.
For the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by Guerrilla Media. Unfortunately, our fabulous guest, Cindy Sheehan, had other engagements that she had to take off on, and I'm pretty sure that they must be pretty frickin' important. And in fact, I'm surprised that we even had her on the show for as long as we did. And I'd like to extend my thanks to her, you know, unreservedly, I might say. Great guest, eh, Will?
Absolutely great guest, yeah, yeah. Really great to have her on. And hopefully again in the future. Like you say, we're lucky to have her time. Unfortunately, didn't get her for the full hour. But I think we covered a lot of ground. I mean, straight away her opening comments really hit the nail on the head. And that this isn't about Republicans and Democrats and National and Labour over here in New Zealand. These are just confusing terms to get us fighting with each other. We need to pick at the real enemies. The real enemies are still putting BPA on your receipts at the friggin' till. They're putting fluoride in your water regardless of who gets voted in. I mean, let's look at the common ground here. The common ground is tyranny, and it comes in all forms. And it doesn't matter whether they wear red or blue or purple or green. I really don't care. You know, if they don't want to kick out the Fed, if they want to kick out the foreign bankers, if they don't want to get the poisons out of our food and water, for a start, I'm not with them.
Well, yeah, and this is the thing, and it's election year here in New Zealand, and I don't know, election year is always a real tough time for me because I know for a fact that whomever I vote for, the agenda will continue. Okay. Doesn't matter if I vote for Labour, the agenda continues, okay? We're still going to get hugely, massively, even more indebted to foreign powers. We're still going to have our civil liberties taken off us. We're still going to have poisons in our food and water supply. We're still going to have lax protections on people's civil liberties, and we're still going to have a police state. Nothing changes. And it Fs me off to no end, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, this election year, I'm going to cause a lot of trouble. I'm going to make a lot of videos, I can tell you that much. And we're certainly going to be offering some actual commentary on the political spectrum as it happens this year. Because,
yeah,
well, let's face it, in this
too,
country...
Benny.
Yeah, yeah. And in this country, well, we don't have any proper political commentary, do we? It's all just manufactured control bollocks.
And we just get told, you know, I'm only 26 and I'm tired of it already. I'm tired of being told, oh, just one step at a time, I'll vote for the lesser of evils, oh, but Labour's, it's got to be better than John Key, or Len Brown, the new mayor of Auckland, it's got to be better than John Banks. It's like, no, not really. It's same old, same old. Same old, same old. Rates are going up for people. Household tax is going up for people. And like I said, we always harp on about the poisoning that's going on. People don't believe me out there. Just Google BPA, bisphenol A, on receipts. Over 40% of receipts that you're handed to you have enough sterilant, have enough BPA to make you infertile. I've been handing over to little kids, you know, indiscriminately. I mean, this is the sort of government we have.
And you know, we're young guys, Will. There are people who are dumb enough and they're like 50 years old, 60 years old or something, and they're still dumb enough to not see it. How can you not see it, ladies and gentlemen?
I don't know, man. I do not know how these people get through life. I want to know. I really want to know. I mean, how do they get through life without being run over or something? I mean, it's just amazing. But seriously,
natural selection.
Yeah, natural selection fail. I mean, total disproven of Darwin right there. I mean, you know, they talk about the Darwin Awards. Hey, it should go out to a few billion people, I'll tell you. But, but seriously, how can we have sterilants on receipts? How can we have neurotoxins in our water? I mean, it's just mental. It's mass madness. It's absolutely mental. And I have these scum telling me, of the educated ones from the universities, oh, but look at the social policy submitted by Michael Cullen and his reformation of the education bill and all this technical nitty-gritty stuff. It's like they're looking into the details of this apple and they're seeing the surface and they're looking at all the grains and the structure and they're going, oh, look, there's an aphid and oh, look, there's this. They can't see it's an apple. They can't see a lie is a lie, no matter how much intricacy, no matter how many people you have invested in it, no matter how many jobs it provides, no matter how many people it dissolves or consumes, it's a friggin' lie. Yeah, and it doesn't change the fact that we're living in a toxic, corrupt society in every sense of the world, in every sense of the word, sorry. I mean, it's just,
well,
doesn't,
you know,
it blow
your
mind?
You're absolutely right. It's like every single aspect. I cannot turn on the television. I cannot turn on my computer. I can't even look at my computer. I can't look at any of the items that are in my home or on the street that doesn't remind me of our corrupt government. Okay, I look at a television and it reminds me of how it turns me into a dreamlike state and corrupts me full of propaganda. I look at my Apple computer and see that it's a manipulation of the Apple of knowledge, you know, with the Apple with the bite taken out of it. You know, it's freaking everywhere. You cannot escape it, and it's all hiding in plain sight, isn't it? You know, and people have got their blinders on, and they're so effective at keeping themselves dumbed down by saying that all of these things that are everywhere around them don't matter. It's like saying my life doesn't have any effect on me.
These elite, the elite now are telling us they're going to kill us. The elite now are telling us what they're going to do. They're blowing up people who deny climate change on mainstream adverts in Britain right now. They're telling us, and people still can't see it.
Yeah, and Lindsay Williams has reported that oil will be $200 a barrel by the end of 2011, and the food prices are going to skyrocket out of the reach of a lot of people, but there will still be food on the shelves. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz and AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We'll be right back next hour with another fabulous guest. And girls, fighters and cowards. Speaking of fighters, Will just sent me an incredible video. All right, it's only a minute long. If you are in any nation in the world and you're at an airport and some elite scumbag, such as David Rockefeller, winds up coming in front of you, you should probably do what this guy did. And I'm going to play this video for you right now because it's just too freaking awesome.
Rockefellers, come back. We don't want your new world order, you know? Leave Chile right now. Leave Chile. You are not... You're killing a lot of people! You're killing a lot of people! Leave here. Leave Chile right now. Leave Chile. Leave Chile! We don't want your world government! Leave Chile right now! Leave Chile, okay? Leave Chile! Your family is the most disgusting in the world, you know? Leave here! Leave! You also, you're a traitor to Chile! Mr. Agustino, you're a traitor to Chile, okay? You're a traitor to Chile! What you're doing right now, okay? 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 You know everything! You know everything! You're participating with him! You're participating with him in this! Your world government will fail, okay? Your world government will fail! Will fail! Will fail! Leave Chile right now. We don't want you here. We don't want your disgusting thing here. Leave Chile now.
Oh, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. You walk right up to them, shove a camera in their face, and you tell them they are scum, they are evil, they are murderers, and they are selling out your country. Big ups, whoever the heck you are, man. That is awesome. You know?
And they're also so arrogant as to think no one's going to recognize the little monster. They're also so arrogant that they haven't got much security, much of a security detail around him, considering he's more powerful than the president.
Well, yeah. I mean, for goodness sake. Well, they expect that we're all just going to, you know, do nothing. And you know, to a certain extent, they're correct, aren't they? You know? Seriously.
Well Bill the Gates guy, can walk around my hometown without getting spotted by people. You know, they just, you know, it's all hidden in plain view. They just like we said before the break, you know, they just like throwing things right in your face, and they get away with it most of the time. Well, this is some old guy in a wheelchair, happens to be David Rockefeller.
Whew, mate. It is hot in New Zealand, and we're going to get it a little bit hotted up. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. Where is going to go?
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
The fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, proudly brought to you by American Freedom Radio in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Time to kick off our Kiwi Collaborator section, where we bring a Kiwi activist or researcher or some relatively awesome Kiwi chap on the show to talk about, well, basically whatever they want to talk about. Our guest today is Roger Morris, who some of you may remember the name when we interviewed Paul Tassopoulos on a previous show, mentioned his incredible artwork. He's an artist for 9/11 Truth and has been doing it for quite some time, and he's what you'd know as a fine artist. Roger, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinnie. Thanks. Very nice.
Oh, well, awesome to have you here, man. I mean, in fact, you're actually a little bit infamous in this country.
Go on, tell me about it.
No, I can't actually. I was just making it up. Now, I wanted to just ask you a little something here. I mean, you've been an artist like for how long in your life? I mean, has it always been a calling of yours, or was it just something that's just popped up recently?
No, it would have been the calling, if you wanted to call it that, would have actually been established in about 1980. That's when I actually formally picked up the brush and put down everything else. So I've been a constant artist, painter, drawer, stone carver since 1980.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that that's been my life. That's how I've paid my taxes in conjunction with my artist partner, Marianne Muggeridge. He's a very fine New Zealand painter. The two of us have managed to keep going for 30-odd years, and that's the matter of it.
And, you know, a lot of people in this country, I mean, regardless of whatever their art form is, it's very difficult to, in fact, make a living from it. And but you've been managing to do so quite successfully, which means you're definitely extremely talented. And it's very easy to see, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a look at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com 2011 archives, we have one of Roger's paintings there, the Nightbringer. Could you tell us what's happening in this particular piece?
Yeah, well, that's to do with the conspiracy of 9/11. Of course, it's the idea that the gigantic secret. It's like a trying to discuss it as a dichotomy, which is the idea of two realities happening in one moment, and we move along on one reality, and we're quite happy as long as nobody comes knocking at our door. But when the door gets knocked on by the Nightbringer, and behind it is the evidence of the 9/11 conspiracy, as is so obvious to anybody who's done any reading at all, that is what the drawing is about. It's a big drawing. It's about 2 meters by 2 meters, so graphite on paper. So, and to do with the design down the on the right-hand side above the barrel, because, of course, you know, the barrel symbolizes oil, which is one part of it, as far as I can tell, the discussions of the spiral of intrigues and the different words put and pull and pop. The pop relates to the eyewitnesses at Ground Zero, who said that they heard popping going on in the buildings before they came down. The puts, of course, are the idea of the all of the chicanery going on in the stock market, which hasn't ended, of course. And the pull is, of course, Uncle Larry, who's so, you know, luckily he had to go to the dermatologist that morning and not go down with his ship.
Well, apparently he only put $1 down on his lease of the World Trade Center.
And then got extra,
yeah, and then got extra terrorism insurance, interestingly enough. And so he made, a couple of billion dollars for $1 down, you know? Pretty sharp investment.
Well, they're all of the leads that are floating around in the world that once you start tying them together, turn into a nice big rope, and hopefully it'll get to hang a few of them.
Well, speaking of hanging a few of them, we got the elite themselves. I mean, I'm very, very concerned that in this day and age, people are really focusing on the problems rather than the problem causes. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm going to follow you along and see how I can help the discussion there. Just keep going, Vinny.
Yeah, well, it's just the thing. People are in blatant denial of the roles of secret societies and intelligence agencies and causing world events like 9/11 and things of that nature. And I wanted to know, really, in any way, shape, or form, how people can really come to any conclusion other than 9/11 was an inside job. I mean, you yourself, you've come to the conclusion, I've come to the conclusion, Will's come to the conclusion, there's thousands of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, educated people who aren't dupe moronic scum, who have all reached the exact same rational conclusion that the government is criminal and they will kill their own citizens so that they can justify doing whatever they want to them.
Yeah, no, that's a big one, and it's obvious what you say is true. I don't quite know. I remember in the early days of trying to figure it out, I'd actually lost a brother-in-law to cancer, and he was very fond. We're very fond with each other, and I can remember coming up with a line that said it was like a mirror, and when you go through it, you get cut by the glass, and I think that's what we're talking about here. The fact is that it is true that there is a deep, dark, dirty state going on out there, and people are being murdered daily. How do we get our consciousness of our people in the society to actually realize that it pertains to them? I don't know. I've put on half a dozen shows. My paintings have been out there. I talk to people. I really don't know. I think that's what a lot of people are actually focusing on now, 10 years after 9/11. Is to try and figure out what the devil it is we're looking at in terms of psychology. And believe it or not, the organizers of events like 9/11 are very, very adroit with psychologies, of course, because the 9/11 conspiracy is one. How we break through and allow the people walking out in the street out there who say, no, I don't want to know, I don't want to know, so I just don't want to know. I don't know the answer to that, Vinny, but I can tell you there's a lot of people working on it on both sides of that dichotomy line.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead right, Roger. It is a it's a psychological warfare operation, really, and it's just how to reach people is probably the biggest. I mean, if you could crack that, you could work it all out, right? I mean, it's not that the information doesn't exist. It's not that the passion doesn't exist with thousands of people like us, millions of people like us, perhaps. I mean, it's just the disconnect between this dichotomy, as you speak, of two alternate realities existing within the one, at least.
Well, there's a third one, too. Yeah, well, it is, but let's... there is a third one, and that's confusion, and the seeds of confusion that are no matter what comes out, there's the immediate response of confusion. And so I look at confusion as being part of that sort of the ongoing conspiracy, if you like. The thing that keeps our pundits and our media spokespeople, who seem to be, as I go through this process, this 10-year-long process now, I'm watching it kind of coagulate into little groups of people. You can be fairly sure that if it's radio in New Zealand or a group like that, what they're going to say is going to be fairly well established before they even open their mouths.
Yeah.
Actually,
because it's all word association. It's all 9/11 conspiracies. Oh, they're anti-Semites. They're right-wing gun nuts. They're crazy people. They believe that the moon landings were staged. They believe that Elvis is still alive and Diana.
They believe that reptoids control the Earth.
Yeah, so they just paint us all with one brush. They tar it all together, and because they've
If you're aware of the Cass Sunstein issue, are you aware of him?
Cass Sunstein is a monster and a half. Yeah.
Well, but the point is that was the idea in his theorizing or in his deciding how to deal with the 9/11 conspiracies. What they decided to do was to lump it all together, and that's the important point, is you've got to lump 9/11 in with all the rest. You cannot allow it to attain a singular status, because as soon as you allow it a singular status, it is evidential, like you've got to throw us all into one big box of madness, and that's one of the programs I believe that is at work out there to keep us all sort of keep this conversation going, much the same as it is right now.
The funny thing about that is then on the other hand, I don't want 9/11 to be a single issue recognition, if you know what I mean, because there have been individuals I've come across who can see 9/11 was an inside job, but then they get misled by some other obvious false flag op, such as the climate change movement
or
the banking system. I want 9/11 to lead people to understanding who the real ruling class are.
That's a huge portal all on its own. But what we're talking about is evidential-based evidence gathering. We're talking about an actual court case here. This 9/11 is provable beyond a shadow of a doubt if we can find a court to put it in, and if we can find the power to bring up people like all of these massive intellects that have been studying it for 10 years and they know stuff. The way to break through into that area that you're speaking of is to actually identify 9/11 as a provable case and get it proven. It's what's got to happen. The only way you can break the illusion is to actually prove it, and we can. We know that.
Beyond any reasonable doubt, beyond any reasonable statistically likely doubt, 9/11 was conceived.
Whoever, we can do it in court. But first we've got to prove that situation couldn't have developed in any other manner.
Controlled demolition. Building 7 just could not have come down in any other manner.
No, that's quite right. We know this.
We need concern on the ground, though, don't we? We need enough concern on the ground. We need influential people, sadly, politicians and celebrities to come out and beyond the fear and to say it, and to say it for what it is.
I totally agree, but there we're entering into that kind of morass, that quicksand of a kind of wish list that, we can talk about that around and around and around in circles, but it's not going to get us anywhere until, well, it might, but what we're trying to do individually is struggle to find ways of actually of achieving that.
Mm. And day by day, it becomes less relevant, supposedly, to people's lives, so that the motivation for it.
The space is infinite. Is that you, Will, by the way?
Yeah, to Will. You are, Roger. Okay, mate. Yeah. great. And I was really excited to have you on today. We were discussing you the other day, too, and your
Okay,
artwork.
Okay. Back to it. What we were talking about what?
We were talking about how do we make this an issue that concerns people, basically. How do we tune into the wavelength that people are operating on? How do we prove to them that 9/11 could not have occurred in the way the official explanation would have it?
Yeah.
How do we get them to care in the first place, though, Roger? How do we get people to care enough to do 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours research?
I don't know. A million civilians in Iraq have been murdered in their beds, in their streets, in their houses. How do we make our people over here understand that by having our SAS and others and our governments involved by proxy, well, not even we're there. Well, I don't know, Will. I really don't. I every day I ask myself this question. It's like we've all gone to sleep somewhere, which brings us back to another out of this whole 9/11 thing. And because I'm an artist, I'm allowed to be a little bit fanciful, right? So when I start discussing this with myself, I see it in terms of like a Walt Disney thing. We've been cast under a spell. The dust of 9/11 that produced the nanothermite chips and is killing all of those good souls who went down there to deal with a real, real, real tragedy happening right in front of them. We've also, that dust also had pixie dust in it. You got me?
Yeah.
It put us all we're all asleep. We're all living la-la land.
I would say we were preconditioned decades earlier. I would say they had us asleep before they pulled the stunt on us.
Yeah, well, that's another way of saying it. But essentially, to comfort myself, I just think of us as all being sort of dusted with pixie dust, you know? And I don't know how we get out of that because we've just had Obama. I mean, who the hell is Obama anymore? You know?
Everybody throws
hope into the next thing, into the next thing, into the next thing, forgetting that it's all, or never even knowing that it's one thing.
I just want to you know what I mean? Like, I'm just a simple sort of guy who's just like, this is an inside job. The banks are, raping us daily, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. We've been poisoned here, we've been poisoned there. And I just want to break through it in a kind of caveman-style fashion. The problem is I'm no Sigmund Freud. I'm no Edward Bernays, I can't think in terms to undo the bow tie they've tied people in, the knot they've tied people in. You know what I mean? It's very complex. I just hope a truth can shatter a thousand lies. I can grab someone intellectually and grab them and shake their brain and go, listen,
right. But I don't know what it is. You check this out within the circles that you're dealing with. Just ask the people who are passionate about this, what is it that makes them different to the people who aren't? And, I mean, look at the researchers that are out there. I was just thinking while you were speaking of David Ray Griffin. Now, what fantastic work he's done. If you read his books, they are academic. They are definitive. They discuss factual evidence. They are extraordinarily accurate and intense books.
Why Kim Hill would call him a Christian nut?
I know.
I mean, I know what makes us different. I know what makes us different. It's a thing called belief. It's a thing called self-awareness and discernment. Kim Hill doesn't have it. She doesn't have a soul. I mean, like, these people are literally gone. They're gone.
I can't believe that. I don't believe that any of us don't have souls.
There are some people who are vessels.
Well,
they've lost their souls and then they get back.
Yeah. You're allowed to be angry about this, there's no doubt. There's a lot of people being killed.
No, I'm not angry. I'm serious. I mean, they've lost their souls, and they're completely untuned from the nature of reality, and they need to claw it back somehow, and it's up to them. But what I mean. Some of this thing is up to the individuals themselves. You know, it's nothing we can do. Perhaps.
So look, that's right. So you've just answered part of your own question.
Yeah. This is.
So what are we
doing? I don't know. This is the study of the mind, though. This is the problem, is we should be able to talk nuts and bolts.
Who else is Edward Bernays? And you know, like, who else is David Chertoff? He's a studier of the mind. These are the guys that set themselves up in the positions of power during 9/11. They created 9/11. They made it happen, and now they're living with the consequence because they own the situation. How do we break through to let the – how do the American people understand that their laws have been taken, their justice? If we had CSI on the job, they would have sussed 9/11 in half an hour without ads.
I know any detective sort of mind, any police detective should be able to work this out. They're conspiratorial, apparently.
Indeed, and we will be right back after the break with our very special guest, the artist known as Roger Morris, live from New Zealand on our Kiwi Collaborator section. Back in a moment, folks.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago.
Welcome
Fargo,
back.
Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa.
Wherever you may be, we're broadcasting everywhere. Live online at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, or if you can listen to us on terrestrial radio, go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the affiliates button to find the appropriate radio station in a town near you. One of which is Rush FM in Hamilton, which has just recently had a fabulous group put up on Facebook called Bring Back Backbeat 89 FM. And basically what this Facebook group is doing is just basically posting a whole lot of abuse towards the station owner Roy, who has fired a whole lot of people who stole things and leaked information out of the thing, and but basically just general scum. I don't mean to be offensive, but you know, basically, yeah.
Your garden variety of scum, eh?
Yeah. You know, and they're saying to me, oh, blah, blah, you know, Vinny, we get lots of complaints about your show. And I just go, really? What did you expect? Yeah, everybody is just going to be, oh, great. They're telling us that the government's a bunch of criminals and our entire country is effed up to no end. And you think nobody's going to get upset about it? Come on, wake up.
Harden up. I'd rather people get upset than people get killed. I mean, welcome to reality. The world's a dangerous place, you idiots.
Just have a look at the WikiLeaks, those, and listen to those guys in the helicopters. Which side are you on? The guys in the street getting blown away, or the guys in the helicopters saying, do it, just do it, just do it?
Yep. And, you know, I always say that criticism is your surefired way to measure engagement. If people hate you enough to start up a Facebook group against you, then you know you must be reaching a heck of a lot of people.
Let's get back to where we were, eh?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We were starting to talk about the psychologies that allowed the 9/11 conspiracies to exist out there. If the people listening that completely deny it still, that's who we're talking to, isn't it? People that completely refuse to acknowledge that 9/11 could be an inside job, a demolition. What is it that allows that paragon in their heads to keep up? That's what we're talking about. And then
Noam Chomsky's got a big following, and he once said that it doesn't matter. It wouldn't make any difference if it were an inside job.
Well, it does. And we know that's the difference, is we know it makes a huge difference. It makes the difference. 9/11 makes the difference. But we were just talking, Johnny Cash was playing, and it made me remember that in the who were the people that taught me the most about this deep state that we're talking about, this national security state? It's basically fascist, but it's a new form of fascism. It's designed in a different way. It's got nice hair and stuff. They don't go around booting people openly anymore. But, well, they do if you're in Baghdad. But and it made me start to think that the early writers and the musicians and the artists that were talking to us in New Zealand here were American. You look at the people who were actually telling us in the Vietnam era, the real bad guys were actually the guys that were in there from the States. They were American artists. Bob Dylan and Neil Young and all of these great writers and singers and musicians that came out of the States were actually the ones who were forewarning us what was to come. And they, you know, it's not just one thing. The States is a huge conglomerate of energy, you know, and it's just that one part has been manipulating its way through like worms through the system all these decades, and they finally grasp power, that's all. But all these other people are out there, still these great intellectuals, these great minds, these great warm-hearted people. And if you're talking to Cindy Sheehan, I would say she'd be one of them, you know. And so they're out there too, and they're working actively every day to try and beat down the system within. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. America is a whole nexus point of, you know, of the highest reaches of evil, so to speak, and also the home of the resistance, as it naturally should be. I mean, where it's the belly of the beast. Perhaps some could argue that the belly of the beast is in the Vatican or somewhere in Europe, but overtly anyway, the war machine seems to be.
We don't really know where that heart of the beast is. It's almost like one of the Hydra heads, isn't it?
And it's monetarily, we can know that the US isn't in charge of things.
Right.
From an economic point of view, in terms of who's issuing currencies, because the US has been indebted hugely.
Right. Now, well, you'd know more about that than I would.
But as far as practical concerns are, as far as you know, who's the baseball bat for these elites to go around smashing people over the head with? It's the US and their armed forces. Yeah,
it's been used to further this kind of global empire. And then, in my opinion, the US is now the globalist fall guy, and they're basically just relocating to China.
They make the best,
you know, because they love China. They love one-child policies. They love having firing squads. They love suppressing ruthlessly any form of protest. You know, why would they want to stay in America when they've got that?
Well, that's a big brush to sweep with. There's a lot of people you would have missed out on it that don't want that at all. Like really, really good people that don't want that at all.
I'm talking about the globalists, of course.
Yeah.
It's the same in the States, though. I mean, the majority of people in the States are good people, too. They're being down the garden path. It's just always been the case, hasn't it? These Caesars come in and they run things and they discredit nations and their entire population gets thrown away with them.
Well, we're entering kind of – this is sort of like a conversation, really, isn't it, of what we don't know as well as what we do. I'm a bit uncomfortable with it. The stuff that we see going on is, as you say, there are all of the, I mean, I watch Max Kaiser, and he is an incredible resource as far as talking about the global economic terrorists are concerned. And of course, with this new, you know, the new chief of staff that Obama's just brought in to replace Rahm Emanuel, the guy from Wall Street, what's his name? The brother of the ex-mayor of Chicago. I mean, it's all true what you say is that these are cabals of people with massive power, massive wealth, and who they relate to and who they are owned by, ultimately, I don't know. But all I know is that the people that get hurt are the ones like the people that had to leap out of the towers that day, or the people that were trying to tell those Reuters journalists that, you know, that something happened down the street and they got blown away, or the thousands that died in Myanmar, Burma, just recently. They're the ones that I kind of sort of feel that I know a little bit more about than these other guys in Wall Street.
I mean, even from a historical point of view, if we want to look at terror, if we want to look at Vietnam and the Gulf of Tonkin, if we want to look at Iran and Operation Ajax, if we want to look at going back to the staged Polish invasion of Nazi Germany, sure. Governments, when a major attack like this happens, supposedly from a foreign enemy, the number one suspect should be that government.
Now we've hold it there, Will. This is a really good point. This is propaganda, because if we're talking about propaganda, this whole thing is propaganda, isn't it? So let's go back to the resources that we could identify and put out there as good tools to begin with in terms of the propagandization of information. And one of them I would recommend people to read is a book called The Cultural Cold War, by a woman called Frances Stoner Saunders. Now, she wrote this book about the identification of the CIA at the end of the Second World War, taking over the culture of America and its projection overseas and within. Books, movies, music, drama, the whole works. That is when the tentacles, if you will, of the propaganda that had existed during the war to keep people's mouths shut so submarines wouldn't be sunk was actually turned around and put back onto their own people and us too, by the way. So
that's what the whole military complex is about. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
well,
about being used on its own population. It's a tool.
And when you look at the movies and the TV now, I don't have TV, but every so often I go into a house where there is one. I sat down and watched one the other night, just a half hour of a sitcom with three couples in it. I don't know what it was called. One of the guys was the guy out of Married with Children. Look, old and really screwed up now. And I sat and watched this interaction between these six people. And in a 20-minute segment, I didn't hear them say one nice thing, bro. Not one. All they did was snipe at each other, pull each other apart, be smart with each other. Now, this is what's being projected onto our children.
It's about breaking down human relations. It's about getting everyone fighting with each other.
Yeah. And guns, you know, like guns are normal. Well, I grew up shooting Indians in my head. I don't know who they turned into in the end. But they turned into rabbits, and then they turned into birds, and then they turned into – and they would have turned into Vietnamese if I had been old enough. And if I had been born in the United States, they would have turned into Iraqis.
Arabs. Yep.
Iraqi people whom – and I've been working with many, actually, in the refugee community in Wellington, and none of them want to be here. When you talk about 9/11 and inside job to them, hey man, there's not one turns around. Actually, there's only one, and he had a axe blow to the back of his head, and he wasn't compos mentis. But everybody else said the same thing, man. They know exactly what happened to bring those forces down on them.
Oh yeah, but then that's why our skeptic society people will just say, oh, look, that's because those Arabs hate America, and of course they want to blame it on the great Satan, and then so they use that as a false flag against us, as a half-truth.
Well, there was a very interesting little statement in the newspaper here a couple of days ago, 3 days ago, and I bet this isn't on mainstream news anywhere, but the Iranian intelligence reported that they'd broken into the Mossad cell that was dealing with them somewhere down in the south. They got in there. So things are happening that we don't know anything about on the ground, eh? Things are happening.
This is
a war. These guys declared war on all of us. George Bush, when he stood up and he said, if you don't go along with us, you're a terrorist. He declared war on me, called me a terrorist, right?
So we had to find a terrorist, yeah. Under the Barack Obama administration, we are terrorists right now engaging in what we're doing.
Right. So, but more than that, Will, is that what they did, and this was the breakdown for me, was that Bush told me what I could absolutely coherently see as a lie was the truth. I know that those buildings exploded into dust. I know that Building 7 came down in a controlled demolition. I know this. But he told me that that's not the truth, and this is the truth. So he jumped in front of the truth with a lie and said, now you've got to accept this as a truth. Now, this is like an abuser. These guys are abusing us. It's like it's a very deep psychology at work here. Now, if we accept that abuse, that translates out into everything we do from then on. Now, if we don't, which is what the three of us are saying we don't and I don't, then that means you're standing up and you're saying, no, screw you. This is not a truth. This is a lie and I can prove it. Then maybe that's part of the change or the difference you're talking about with the people you speak of. When they get all sort of all dreamy and flippant and they don't really care, they don't really want to talk about 9/11 because it really doesn't mean anything.
All those people I speak of there would say, oh, I don't like George Bush either. Look, no one likes George Bush. John Campbell doesn't like George Bush. But you look at the video where we go after John Campbell and ask him about 9/11. You see, to these people, it's all, yeah, the world's messed up, but it's not that messed up. See, this is, and they convince themselves of that.
Well, anybody that hasn't seen the bodies piled outside Auschwitz that doesn't think the world is this messed up, they better get thinking. They better get studying.
That was then, though. That was then. That's Godwin's law, reference to the Nazis.
That's right.
You can't use Godwin's law.
Now, the trauma of the Holocaust. The
I got
trauma.
Told by a, sorry.
You go.
I was just saying, I got told by this political science expert from Waikato University that I, as soon as I used a reference to the Nazis, that was a Godwin's law reference and my whole argument was defunct. That's what it's like debating with these people.
Yeah. Well, that's just, yeah. Look, the thing that you come back to him and say is that the spiritual resonances of the Holocaust are being visited upon us all every day. The Nazis.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Our very special guest is Roger Morris from Atlas for 9/11 Truth. We'll be right back momentarily.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Go brush out to me, man. That's all part
of it. It's one of the greatest pieces they've ever done, eh?
Yes. Straight up. It's all part of the foreplay here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Clever man, eh?
Yeah, I especially like this song. It was a Robots. I forget what it's called or something like that.
The humans are dead.
It's really good.
Business time's better than that. Go on in.
Fair enough. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest is Roger Morris, who is an artist for 9/11 Truth. And, you know, we've been talking about a lot of different things and sycophantic kind of resistance to wanting to know the truth. And, you know, there's a lot of ego, basically plastered on us. You know what I'm saying, guys? It's like we don't actually have that much of an ego per se when it comes to talking about these things. But when people are conspiracy deniers, they say that we do because they're retarded.
Well, they have an ego. That's how they deny reality. I mean, they're proud of themselves.
It's part of the power. They're creating the box that's very difficult to step out of because most of the people I know involved in this are not generally involved in any public way or thinking, you know, I mean, 9/11 activated them and they are not actually, in many cases, none of us are trained up for it. Once the light turns on inside you and you realise what it is you're looking at, you've got to learn a whole new skill set. So being called an egotist about it is one definite way of putting you down and it does shut you up a lot of the time, there's no doubt. But you can get around that once you just keep reading. And keep finding, you know, the facts are out there. Once you get the facts, it's cool because you can go back at them. It's a matter of not heating up in discussion. I find the biggest mistakes I make are when I heat up. Instead, it's taking a step back and just taking them on at a different, you know, come around a different angle, and suddenly you pinned them down. I mean,
it's an easy thing to do, isn't it? To heat up. I mean, that's one of my flaws, yeah. And it's because of the passions and. it's because of the passions involved, though. But a lot of it is in how people, you know, a lot of the heating up is up for interpretation also. But it's because people who don't have the passion won't look into things in the first place, and therefore it's very easy for them to be the cool, calm, collected one. We see that with political debates.
So what's that passion that switches somebody from that point to the other point? Because that's a key point to be, you know. If you identify that, what makes them different?
It's caring about human life. It's not thinking that we are born to serve and pay taxes. I mean, it's not thinking that we're born to just go through school, go through university, and just follow everyone else and keep up with the Joneses.
Is that what's been happening here? Is that, I mean, remember that Alex Jones got into the Bohemian Grove, and he videoed was a ceremony called the Absence of Care. Now, is that what we're talking
about? The cremation of care.
Okay, so what
care
we're talking
in
about,
that sense, in the care C-A-R-E. In that sense, I think that represents their attachment to us, because they're all managing us. So the micromanagement.
Okay. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. What I'm talking about is if you've got a religious ceremony that people are bowing down to a concept called the absence of care, you would think that that would pass back through to the societies that they're dealing in. I would say that that's an identifiable feature of an opposite view. And there's another thing that strikes me. We were talking about secret societies before. You've got, look, can you imagine in New Zealand having a secret society running out of Victoria University called the Skull and Bones that had the head, the skull of, say, one of the Tangata Whenua prophets?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that happening in New Zealand?
Well, there actually are cults here in New Zealand, believe it or not. It's kind of there are some underground stuff that goes on. I don't know.
Now, we're talking about Geronimo's skull in a civilized society as part of a secret society.
Sure.
Now, that is not civilized behavior. So if that's the core of what we're talking about, then how the devil can we think we're going to be able to reach people who are so far out on the wings of it?
But that's what the elites have done all throughout history. They have to get into the sickest thing going. It goes further and further, killing babies, drinking their blood.
I got that, but Geronimo's family actually took a court case about a year ago to the Supreme Court, and it got thrown out. They went for the skull of their ancestor, and the American law couldn't allow it now. If that's the kind of law justice we're talking about, if that's what we're talking about, then I don't know how we're going to get through the fact that 3-4 shows demolition into the court system. How do we do that?
Well, Roger, the New Zealand Parliament is a Masonic temple. The same secret societies that run Skull and Bones, the same people we're up against here, the same people who carried out 9/11, their philosophy, not the same individuals per se, and their individuals could be good people, some of them I know, but their philosophy runs Parliament.
Right. Well, that sounds that's something that's going to make me fall off the chair.
The beehive. The beehive is a Masonic symbol. It's also
part of the private conversation rather than the public conversation. You know what I mean? We're talking of 9/11.
Roger, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show. You know, just like in the movie 2012, I wish we had more time. We'll certainly have you on again sometime in the future.
Thank you, Roger.
Done, mate.
All right. Roger Morris, ladies and gentlemen, Google him. All right, and thank you very much for listening to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Please send your complaints through to the relevant people, because we just love justification for what we do. We'll be back tomorrow.